My hands tightened against the hem of my dress, knowing that my proposal would not be popular. But to do that, we'll have to return to Odalia as soon as possible. Counselor Ludwig had not been idle, and his official retirement from Asteran politics in no way put a damper on his love for spying and intrigue.
Odalia has done little since their abortive attempt at invading Kion, he reported,
spreading a fan of reports on the Empress's table.
Frankly, I'm surprised. It's not in the Duke's temperament to give up so easily, especially after such heavy losses. I have read reports of them fortifying parts of the city by increasing their soldiers on watch, which is not unexpected. I see no siege preparations despite the rise of military activity, but they do not appear to have plans to mount another attack. The Odalians are fearful and unsure. The king has not shown himself for some time, and neither has the duke. As far as my spies are aware, Prince Kantz remains stable, though there is no change in his condition.
The old man frowned.
Personally, I think Holzrath plays a waiting game, to see what we would do. News of Dinoris would have reached him by now. Surely you can wait before attacking.
Lady Michaela and Lady Polaire are better, but they will only grow weaker in time again, Empress Alex pointed out. If there is a remote chance that we can recover her heart's glass, then we should do so before they take another turn for the worse.
A pretty theory on paper, Your Majesty, said Zoya, ever the pragmatist. But sneaking two Asha, who are not exactly at the peak of health, into hostile territory, makes for difficult logistics.
Polaire and Michaela are rallying at the moment, Zoya. But Michaela will die. And Polaire, in her stubborn refusal to relinquish Michaela at the cost of her own life, will soon follow.
Althi sighed.
Your faceless book deals very much with the process of using the Heartshare rune, Tia. But it says very little about repercussions. Which is not surprising, as faceless think little of the consequences of their own actions. But it is very clear on one point. Heartshare is a temporary fix. In time, they will both die, and we cannot measure the when of it.
Then what do you propose? Althi grinned, grim and purposeful.
Perhaps we should ask Polaire and Michaela themselves. It is their lives at stake.
Let's do it, Polaire said immediately.
Polaire! Michaela protested.
I love you, Mickey, but I am not going to be tethered to you any longer, knowing you can weaken again at any moment. I can still fight, and I can defy any Asha to say otherwise. The sooner we find your heart's glass, the better chances we have of winning this war.
I didn't have the chance to apologize to you, I told Polaire. I made assumptions that I shouldn't have, and it was wrong of me not to trust you. I'm so sorry. If I could take back all the words I said... The brunette smiled and wrapped me up in a hug.
You are so much like me, Tia. Perhaps that is why I chose not to tell you, knowing full well you would act the way I would. I love you even at your most troublesome, you silly girl. You are stronger than I give you credit. So it's time I should start.
She smiled coyly.
Kaelin seems to have come to the same conclusion.
Nothing got past Polaire.
We were four, and they numbered in the hundreds of thousands. But the fighting ceased. They retreated. They knew. Our seven Deva outnumbered them all. It was the golden-haired Asha who rode out to greet us, gesturing at the others to stay back. I saw some of the elder Asha ignore the command, though they stopped several feet behind her when the Bone Witch approached. Unlike Lady Michaela, the older Asha sweated profusely under the hot sun, and the silk of their hua stuck to their skin in the least appealing ways. There were other Asha and Death Seekers among the army. I saw glimpses of hua in muted colors and men dressed in heavy black. My Zivar glowed, almost as bright as their heart's glass.
Tia! Lord Fox broke through the ranks and stopped beside Lady Michaela, frustration and anguish etched across his face. The dark Asha smiled at him.
I told you they wouldn't listen.
She gestured back at the city. all 7 Deva at my command. But do you see the palace burning? Do you see chaos, anarchy? I spared the people as much as I could. I came here to kill a cruel man, no matter what falsehoods those old fools told you.
Wretched little girl!
One of the elders sputtered, her face red.
And the corpses? Lady Michaela asked.
Stragglers I collected from graves on my journey here. If my undead did not attack, you would have done worse to Santiang. Do not ask me to choose between the lives of an army you raise against me and the lives of citizens who did not ask to take up arms.
They are only Denorians,
the elder snapped, and almost immediately hunched over, choking and pawing at her throat.
And you're an ugly old woman hiding her mediocrity in expensive clothes. One Denorian is worth more than 1,000 of you.
Tia! Lady Michaela exclaimed. The old woman took in a shuddering gasp of air. The Bone Witch turned to her former mentor, her voice matter-of-fact.
Where is Empress Alex?
Returning to Keon. It was Lord Fox who responded. I'd convinced her that you mean no harm to Denoris, and she seeks to boost Ankyo's defenses.
Denoris is intact, and I have reached an understanding with the Empress Yancheo.
Empress Yancheo? Lady Michaela asked. What has become of Emperor Shifang?
Emperor Shifang died many months ago. We have since disposed of the impostor. Lord Kaelin stepped forward, a large sack in his hand. He tossed it to the ground before them. You might recognize his head. Wary, Lord Fox stooped down to retrieve the sack, ripped it open. He sucked in a noisy breath. Usige, he said bleakly. My knees buckled.
We have no intentions of fighting any of you. Do not stand in our way, Lady Tia pronounced.
We are wasting time,
another elder snapped, the same one who had accompanied the Empress to the palace.
You will return these Deva to their graves, and you will return with us to Keon, where you will be summarily tried for your crimes.
My crimes, Mistress Hestia?
The Bone Witch mocked her.
My crimes. You were there the night they died, Elder. You have no intentions of returning me alive to Keon. Even now, your scheming mind plots ways to kill me.
You killed your own flesh and blood, the Elder hissed. That alone merits the executioner's axe.
And I will pay for that sin soon enough. But not today. I know you will not allow me to stand trial, Elder. Would you really allow me to provide a full accounting of what happened that final night?
You!
Mistress Hestia stopped, her eyes bulging. A peculiar charge was coming over the woman, along with some of her fellow elders. A queer gurgling sound began at the base of her throat, lower than her thin voice could manage. Lady Michaela stepped back in alarm, and so did the Bone Witch, looking as startled as the rest. Mistress Hestia clutched at her throat, stumbled, and fell to the ground. Her tongue lolled out as she jerked and spasmed, turning bloated and black.
"What did you do, Tia?"
Lady Michaela gasped.
"I haven't done anything!"
The elder moaned one last time, and insect-like wings sprouted from her back.
29. Getting into Neve, Zoya growled, spitting out a mouthful of hay. Sounds infinitely better on paper than it is from inside a wagon. Unlike the Odalian army that had showed up at Ankyo, there was no Keon army attacking the gates. But there were Keon Asha and Deathseekers gathered around the city, led by Alzrin and Shadi, staying out of view until they were called upon. Besides, the Azi was an army all on its own. Under my guidance, it attacked the outposts first. The watchtowers crumbled, and I forced myself not to think about the casualties, of how many unsuspecting soldiers had been there when the attack commenced. I could not think about it. The stakes were higher now. The Azi still waged bloody war above us, and the whole palace shuddered whenever it flew too close, striking the top of the battlements with its tail,
destroying centuries-old architecture in one heavy swipe. I had no fear that any attacks Odalia might mount in retaliation would injure the Aussie, so for the moment, I was content to let it move independently, leaving a cautious note in its head to increase its distance to the city, to prevent any more citizens from being harmed. The Deva had the easier task. All it needed to do was distract the soldiers from us. Our entrance into the city was a lot less conspicuous than my Aussie's, and Zoya wouldn't shut up about it.
"Whose brilliant idea was it to use a hay wagon, of all things?"
she sputtered as she crawled out from underneath the bales. Kaelin was the first out the wagon, helping me to my feet. We were dressed like death seekers. Black breeches and long-sleeved shirts further camouflaged us in the approaching evening.
"Why didn't we use a fruit wagon or one of those covered wagons Yadoshans seem to be so fond of?"
"We could have had a wagon made from goose pillows, Zoya, and you'd still be complaining." Polaire had recovered rapidly almost as soon as we had entered Neve, nearly returning to her old self again. The color had returned to Michaela's cheeks, and she no longer needed Polaire's help to move about, climbing down from the wagon with her old agility after Alticia.
"Wasn't it your idea, Zoya?"
Khalid asked pointedly, squirming out of the wagon after her. Fox, his face hidden underneath a dark cloak and hood, was the carriage driver, leading the horses. The illusion rune I had woven around us had been most effective, and we had managed to enter the city unmolested.
"Perhaps I am slowly losing my mind like the rest of you. Among us, I'm practically the only one not on the Duke's wanted fugitives list."
"We all have a part to play in this enterprise, Zoya," Polaire said sweetly. "And as you said, you have the least important part to play. You can stay in the city until we return if you'd like."
"And miss out on all the fun? Not on your life."
Zoya brushed what straw she could off herself, making a face.
"A little less talk," Kaelin said. "The entrance to the crypts shouldn't be guarded. Few soldiers keep watch there."
"Tia knows,"
Fox said with a sidelong glance at me, and I snorted. The royal catacombs were as I had remembered them, gloomy and stale-smelling, with the same statues and marbled columns. Kings of ages past loomed over us as we walked down the narrow stairway. Kaelin brought up the front and Fox guarded our rear. I could see the familiar shape of King Vanner's tomb looming before us, and watched as Kaelin took the initiative. Fire combined with mud, and the stone and dried bricks crumbled from the vault where the king's body lay, the sound muffled by the ongoing chaos above us. Zoya and Polaire added their strength to Kaelin's, and heavy currents of wind drew the coffin out into the open.
"Your turn, Tia," Polaire told me.
As before, it was easy enough to compel the dead king to rise. Much more difficult to compel him to speak. King Vanner showed the same stubbornness from when we had left off at his last raising. No sound issued from his lips, though his eyes remained trained on Michaela as if the rest of us did not exist. It was clear that his presence pained my sister Asha. Pain and grief were evident on her face, and the anger inside me burned again.
"I can't do anything if he's not willing,"
Khalid reminded us.
"Where is Lady Michaela's heart's glass?"
I demanded of the corpse. As before, he made no reply. Polaire frowned.
"Perhaps we are asking the wrong question, Tia." "What other question is there but that?"
Zoya wanted to know.
"We must be quick about it. I don't like exposing Michaela to this royal degenerate any longer than is necessary."
"No," Michaela said quietly. "I have been silent enough at previous raisings, despite my own doubts and fears. Many of my fellow Asha tried to be kind. They thought my presence would motivate him to speak, but also worried what toll his nearness might take on me. Not anymore. Do not treat me like glass. I am stronger than that. What must be asked are questions I was too afraid to have answered. Questions that none of you dared ask out of respect for me."
She looked back at her former lover.
"Vanner, Did you love me?
The silence ticked by. 5 seconds. 10 seconds. 20.
Yes.
I jumped, for I had not expected a reply. Death had made King Vanner's voice harsh, but a strange, contrite note laced it, modulating his anger but also imbuing his voice with unspoken emotion.
Did you love me when you died?
Yes.
That's a bald-faced lie, and you know it, Vanner, Polaire began heatedly. You don't hide the heart's glass of the person you love for more than a decade and then refuse to disclose its location long after your death.
King Vanner said nothing, his eyes still on Michaela. It was as if Polaire had never spoken.
What do you think, Khalad?
Zoya whispered.
I'm not sure. The lack of a heart's glass makes him harder to read.
Other than stating the obvious, I mean.
The dead can't lie, which means he isn't lying. But that doesn't mean he can't hide the truth, I said.
I'm a prime example of that, I guess,
Fox murmured.
Maybe we're going about this the wrong way. We say that he hid her heart's glass because he didn't love her. But what if he hid her heart's glass because he loved her? I suggested.
That doesn't make much sense either, Zoya said.
But it does,
Althi broke in, frowning.
What if he was hiding her heart's glass to protect her? What was he doing in the days leading up to his death?
I struggled to remember my history lessons. King Vanner was visiting the Emperor of Denoris when he was attacked. That was Emperor Undol, Emperor Shifang's father. Denoris was lifting the closed border policies of its kingdom, and Odalia was trying to negotiate more lucrative trade agreements. It was at first suspected that Denoris was responsible for King Vanner's murder, but the investigations King Telamane ordered could find no proof. Denoris had everything to lose and nothing to gain by assassinating King Telamane's brother. The last thing they would want at that point was to gain notoriety by killing the first king to offer a trade alliance with them.
There were some theories that circulated, of mercenaries from Tresea killing King Vanner to shift the blame on Denoris,
Althi said, remembering.
But there was no proof to support that either.
Well, why not ask the guy directly while he's here?
Zoya demanded. We did. He's never responded to that either.
Don't any of you understand? Why? Why answer Michaela when she asks if he still loves her but not answer anything else? Fox, what are you doing?
My brother ignored Zoya, stepping toward the dead king.
King Vanner, who first suggested the idea of a trade agreement with Denoris?
It was I,
came the expressionless reply.
Were you and Emperor Undol on cordial terms?
Yes.
What did you have for breakfast that morning?
Bread and cheese.
What is the point of all these questions, Fox? Polaire asked him. I don't see what bearing they have on the questions we wish to ask him.
Exactly. Don't you see? He seems quite capable of answering questions as long as they have nothing to do with his death, or as long as you don't ask him where Michaela's heart's glass is. Don't you see anything wrong with that? The dead don't lie. I speak from experience in that regard. But if he does love Michaela, then why wouldn't he help us?
Because he doesn't trust us, Zoya suggested. But Michaela's here too.
Or, I said with newfound understanding, it's because someone was controlling his heart's glass and compelling him against his will before he died.
Someone was compelling him?
Khalid said, aghast. I have some experience in that area, too. When Aina compelled me in the past, I couldn't tell any of you what she was doing, even though I wanted to, and I was made to believe that I was acting of my own volition. Couldn't the same thing have happened to King Vanner? Khalid was already nodding his head.
It's possible. In fact, it's more than possible. If he loved Michaela, his heart's glass would have remained with her. But if someone had cast a spell on him and compelled him otherwise, Then that would explain why I couldn't retain my hold on his heart's glass.
Michaela finished, her eyes widening.
But how could someone keep control even after his death?
King Vanner, Khalid began. Do you know where Michaela's heart's glass is?
Silence. That was one of the questions he never answers, Zoya reminded him.
King Vanner, is there a reason why you cannot tell us more about Michaela's heart's glass?
Yes.
That he even answered startled us all, and the forger pushed on doggedly.
Is it to protect her?
Silence.
Are there certain questions that you cannot answer because you've been bespelled by someone before you died?
No answer.
Let me rephrase that. Are there certain questions you cannot answer but would like to if given the chance?
Yes.
Do you know who killed you?
Yes.
Can you tell us who?
Silence.
I still don't understand, Polaire said. Why is he answering some questions but not others?
Because whoever bespelled him couldn't anticipate all the possible questions we could ask or the loopholes we could use. They never thought we would know that he'd been compelled, remember? None of us had considered the possibility before. As long as we do not ask him directly about the location of Michaela's heart's glass or who killed him, he can answer.
I repeat Mickey's question. How is it possible for someone to control him even after death?
Althea demanded.
I was one of the Asha who examined the king when he died. We found no traces of spells on his person.
The control could be through a rune we do not know, a spell we have not been taught. Anything is possible at this point. Remember, there were missing pages from the Faceless's book.
Vanner, Michaela said softly. Did anyone from Dinoris bear any resentment toward you?
No.
From Tresea?
No.
From Odalia?
More silence. If that isn't an answer, then I don't know what is. Zoya looked smug. He won't respond to certain questions. But if we limit his answers down to a yes or no and eliminate possible answers as we go along, then I think we've found our loophole.
I hate complicated, Kaelin grunted.
King Vanner, was the Duke of Holzrath responsible for your death?
Silence again.
Okay, not the right question. Vanner, did the Duke of Holzrath begrudge your relationship with Michaela?
No.
Did King Telamane?
Zoya,
Kaelin protested.
Process of elimination, remember? We can eventually get to the...
Zoya's voice trailed off.
He didn't say no. King Vanner, did King Telamane resent your relationship with Michaela?
The king said nothing, and a chill crept up my spine. Surely that didn't mean...
Zoya swallowed. Did King Telamane wish to become king by assassinating you?
Silence.
Did King Telamane wish he were the firstborn son instead of you?
For the first time, Vanner tore his gaze away from Michaela to focus on Zoya.
Yes.
Was King Telamane willing to do anything to become the king of Odalia?
Silence. Khalid gasped. Michaela clapped a hand over her mouth.
I can't believe that,
Kaelin said hoarsely. I spoke up, voice trembling. Do the elders have Michaela's heart's glass?
No.
Is the Faceless, Aina, working with the elders?
No.
Is Aina in league with the king? I asked. King Vanner's gaze shifted to the shadows. That was the only warning I had. But it was not enough. White-hot electricity lanced through me, the pain barely fading before I found myself on my back. From the groans and startled cries around me, I knew I was not the only one.
That was sheer genius. I must congratulate you all on your creativity.
Still unable to move, I opened my eyes and stared straight into King Telamane's smiling face. How could you, Telamene?
Polaire hissed from nearby. The king shrugged.
Vanner was a fool, throwing his heart away for a dark Asha. He was the laughingstock of Odalia, and he was too besotted to realize it. Your Ozzy can rage all at once outside these city walls, Lady Tia, but it means nothing here, where I am in control.
Impossible,
Althi said through gritted teeth.
You have no inclination for runic magic.
No, he doesn't,
a voice behind him agreed. I lunged upward, desperately clawing at the walls in a bid to right myself, to will myself the required energy to leap at the newcomer and attack her mind. To no avail. The pain in my head increased, and I slumped back down. The figure stepped forward.
But I do, said Einar.
I remembered the Hanjian and his painful transformation, his protruding tongue and blackened face before the Bone Witch killed him, before he could become one of those hideous creatures. I remembered the poor Denorian soldiers. In these elders, I saw the same horrifying changes, their features distorted and twisted, until their faces were no longer familiar, and more limbs and appendages burst from their bodies, until they were parodies of humanity. 12 of the elders had undergone differing anomalies, though all resulted in the same kind of horrors, a bison-like creature with an armadillo's armor, a snake that stood several yards high with a long forked tongue, 6 hoofs, and a spiked horn that grew at the end of its tail, another with the jaws of a crocodile and the wings of a dragon, a praying mantis 10 feet tall with 8 legs that ended in hooked talons. Mistress Hestia was gone, and the ripped remains of her Hua were the only evidence she had once been a woman. In her place was a nightmare, a terrifying beast, with the beak and the facade of a rooster, but with lion's arms and a sentient tail of snake heads. Her wings fluttered, growing several feet on either side of her body, and 3-pronged horns adorned her head in a terrifying mockery of a crown. Like the others, her silver heart's glass was fused to her chest, shining faintly.
Impossible! Lady Michaela cried out. They've been blighted!
The horned rooster crowed, laid its beady eyes on the Bone Witch, and opened its mouth. Something that looked like blue fire erupted from its beak, lancing straight toward her. Fox leaped for the dark Asha, as did the Death Seeker. Magic sparked around Lord Kaelin, and Lord Fox pulled Lady Tia to the ground, shielding her body with his own. But it was the Sa'vul that moved quickest, throwing itself in front of its mistress, shrieking as the intense fire burned through its skin. It sank to its knees. Red-hot flames blazed atop Lord Kaelin's hand, arching toward the hideous Asha beast. Almost at the same time, Lady Michaela lifted her arms, and lightning rained down from the sky. But the creature simply ducked its head, and both attacks glanced harmlessly off its hide.
They are invulnerable to magic, just as Deva are, I gasped.
Send the rest of the soldiers back, Fox all but snarled to his men, lifting himself up. Protect the Empress and the Princess at all costs, but do not engage in this fight. Asha and Death Seekers to me.
Fox, the Bone Witch said softly. Thank you.
Habits are hard to break, he said shortly, helping Lady Tia back to her feet.
See to Inessa's safety first. Whatever you say, we both know I am no longer your priority. As it should be.
Tia.
Go to her, Fox. If I die, then I will not deny you any minute you can spend with her.
The rest of her Deva raced forward, teeth and claws bared, and when the first blows came, the world shook. The Deva had been waiting long to fight. The non-gate drew first blood, savage fangs ripping into one of the snake-like Asha beasts, and the latter roared out its hurt, proof they could still be harmed. The Aishma rolled itself into a large ball of metallic spikes and plunged through the monsters, tearing skin and bones as it went. The Asha beast that was once the elder Hestia snapped at the Torvi,
its beak sharp and poisonous, and the Torvi collapsed, whining. The Savul and the Akvan rushed to its aid. Both Lord Kaelin and Lady Mikaela had abandoned all attempts to fight the Asha beasts and began their retreat, though the Death Seeker stayed close to the Bone Witch.
"Leave, Mickey!" the Dark Asha shouted at her mentor. "This is not a fight you can win!" "I will not leave you, Tia!"
The older woman raised both her hands, and the Asha beasts paused, reeling as if dazed, struggling to shake off her control.
"Fox, take the bard and get out of here!"
The familiar obeyed, grabbing me and lifting me up on his horse with little effort. I looked behind me and saw the winged serpent shake free from the enchantment Lady Mikaela had cast. Already it was leaping toward the woman, its mouth horribly agape. Tia screamed once, and then I saw nothing else as the Ozzy bathed my vision with more fire, obscuring my view as Lord Fox's horse broke into a dead run away from this battle of titans.
30. They knew. Those were the words running through my head over and over, even as Aena stepped past us toward King Vanner. They knew we were coming to the crypts, and they had planned for it. There were wards around the royal tombs, which were dormant until Aena had activated them. Now her compulsion was strong enough to batter our defenses. Frantic, I sought out the Ozzy still on a rampage around the city. For a moment, its thoughts touched mine, only to be wrenched away as Aena severed our connection.
"No, little lady, we wouldn't want that."
I had lost my hold on King Vanner, but he remained upright, no doubt now under Aena's influence. His eyes stared unseeingly at the wall before him, paying the Faceless and his brother no attention.
"Father?"
Khalid quavered.
"Surprised?" Aena asked, smiling.
She bent down and slipped the protection stone off my neck.
"You should thank Lady Mikaela. It was she who told Telamain that you were skulking around the catacombs, hoping he would station a guard there. As you can see, Telamain took Michaela's advice to heart. And doing so has gone better than expected, my Tia. Usij was an eyesore. I had hoped to imbue you with runes and point you in his direction so I would have one less rival for Shadowglass, whichever of you won. You have performed your task admirably."
"A liar, as always," I hissed.
"I spoke no lie. My offer to join our cause was genuine. You have always been a true child of the dark, Tia. I knew it the instant our minds first touched."
"There's no time for conversation, my love," the king said. "Prepare what you need."
I watched Aena as she moved around the tomb, ignoring Vanner. The runes she traced in the air were unknown to me. She smiled as she caught my eye.
"Did you really think I would show you every rune I know, Tia? A shame, really. We could have worked well together."
"You were imprisoned." I had felt her distress at her warded cell, and it had been unfeigned.
"It was necessary to be imprisoned, to keep me uncomfortable and pliant to your coercion whenever you visited Odalia. Telamain more than made up for it whenever you left the city.
Did you silence Vanner with one such spell?" She laughed.
"There are spells that conceal his mouth, even without compelling him. You should know, Tia. It was one of the runes I used on you while you were a novice."
"How could you, Telamain?" Polaire raged. "How could you be in league with that faceless witch?"
"Why shouldn't I, Polaire?"
Gone was the hearty attitude, the pretense of concern and compassion. The king's eyes glittered against the firelight, cold and calculating.
"It was I who had Vanner killed, Polaire. I have been with Aena for many years, long before you were in Asha."
"Vanner was your brother," Polaire protested.
"Forget it, Polaire," Kaelin groused. "The king had no qualms about using my father as his scapegoat.
but I now understand why he revolted against you.
Ah, yes. Lance had always been smarter than Vanner, but not by much. I'm glad I kept him alive all these years. Vanner was weak-willed and spineless, more concerned at playing house with a bone witch, while other kingdoms slowly outstripped Odalia in power and influence. You may not think it, Polaire, but I am as much a patriot as you think you are. Our kingdom suffered at the hands of Vanner. Our army was in disrepair, and what did he do? Pin all our hopes and riches on some poor little village because it had an inferior runeberry patch. Dinoris encroaches on our and Kosho's coastal territories, and he offers them a trade agreement. By the time he was done, Odalia would have been nothing more than a vassal kingdom, robbed of its status and power at the mercy of Dinoris, Keon, or the Eidosha city-states. Vanner's death was a blessing, Polaire. I merely sped up what nature was too slow to accomplish.
Zoya wriggled slightly, attracting my eye before casting her gaze upward at the wards around us. Her fingers twitched. You're not telling us everything, I said. Wresting the kingdom away from your brother was only one reason you killed King Vanner. You might not have shown me every rune you know, Aina, but you should not have provided me with the blueprint to create Heart's Glass, even if you thought immortality would appeal to me. You didn't only need a silver Heart's Glass. You needed the most powerful one you could find for the best potency. But Vanner learned of your schemes and disrupted your plans by hiding Michaela's Heart's Glass. You know where it is, but none of your runes can give you access.
You have always been very perceptive, Tia.
You might have sealed his tongue, but you cannot seal his intentions, I declared.
And that is why I keep your Heart Forger alive. Did you know they are capable of taking Heart's Glass without permission?
I snapped my head toward Khaled in amazement. He flinched.
Yes, it is part of the Heart Forger's oath, to refuse those who are not willing. That is why so few people meet the qualifications for forging. That is their true trade secret, for fear others may take advantage of them. But seeing his friends tortured might give Khaled better motivation. Perhaps you would like to offer your own Heart's Glass in Michaela's stead?
Aina clapped her hands in delight.
We shall make it a contest. The first to give up their silver Heart's Glass shall be put out of their misery quickly, and the others will be left to torment.
But Prince Kantz, I tried to lift myself off the ground, but it felt like a heavy rock sat on my chest. Prince Kantz is innocent. His own son.
Ah, Kantz, Aina sighed. We had no choice with Kantz. He was one of only two from Anahita's lineage to satisfy our requirements for Shadow Glass, and we could not spare the young Heart Forger should old Meryl die.
Did you really think I would put Kantz in any danger?
Telamane asked scornfully.
Aina took his soul and kept it safely hidden, knowing that Usijj might strike him next. She merely planted a suggestion of Dinoris about his Heart's Glass in the hopes that you would rise to the bait.
The faceless woman giggled.
And Princess Yan Sheo has made a miraculous recovery. If Khaled works with us, then perhaps Kantz too shall recover. Kantz would be understandably grief-stricken to discover that many of his friends have been put to death for treason while he was asleep. Such as his uncle, the Duke of Holzrath.
A sound of both rage and agony fractured from Kaelin's mouth.
He was not in the best of health, and the added compulsion broke him. Fortunately, his role in this matter had already been completed.
A sudden spurt of laughter broke the silence. To my shock, it came from Khaled, his body shaking where he lay.
I wondered why you'd ignored me all these years, Father, only to start inquiring about me in these last few months. You needed me to forge this Heart's Glass. Does that still make me the royal disappointment?
Nonsense, Khaled!
Telamine snapped.
Nonsense.
With a grunt,
Khalid flipped onto his stomach. You said I was a worthless heir, incapable of giving you grandchildren because of my unnatural proclivities. You banned me from functions and put Kant's in the spotlight long before my heart turned silver. And when it did, you turned me over to the heart forger and said I was no longer your son. Is that what you call nonsense nowadays, father?
His lip curled.
I thought you'd changed the last couple of months. And fool as I was, it gave me hope. But I watched Kant's support Lick's appeal to become an Asha. And you didn't.
How could you when you'd rejected your own son for those same unnatural proclivities?
Khalid was resisting the spell, struggling to his feet. You couldn't even pretend. Couldn't announce to the people why you refused to champion Lick's bid when you couldn't look at me without disgust. So instead, you took the opportunity to make it all about Kant's and his engagement. That was why my brother was in such a state afterward. He'd realized your aim. I could see it all over your heart's glass. How dare this catamite upstart demand this from my obedient, normal son?
Telamine hit Khalid across the face, and he went down.
I would beat your proclivities out of you if I could, the king said, seething.
Khalid choked on blood but laughed.
But you can't, can you? You could bend Kant's to your whims, but you could never do the same to me. In the interest of scientific curiosity, Althi said calmly, what exactly are you intending to do here?
Make shadow glass, of course,
Ana smiled.
Our forger here has done the impossible, replicating what we need.
She smiled at King Telamine.
We will be immortal, he and I, and Odalia shall prosper under our rule.
Fox's gaze met mine. Kaelin was close beside me, and I wriggled as best as I could until my feet brushed against his shin.
Wait,
I spoke up.
Leave them alone and I'll give my heart's glass freely.
Tia!
Zoya shouted behind me.
How nauseatingly noble. Come here, Tia.
Unwillingly, my body rose. Ana laid a hand on my heart's glass.
Such a waste, Tia. If events had gone differently, you could have been standing beside me.
I would rather stand with Deva.
Falling on misplaced courage now. You no longer control the Ozzy, Tia. Deva have no true master.
The ground around us heaved, caught in the throes of a sudden earthquake. It knocked both Ana and King Telamine off their feet, and Ana's control wavered.
Fox and Khalid leaped forward, the latter plunging his hand straight into King Vanner's chest.
The roof above tore open. The Ozzy gazed down at us, purring, and its strength sang through me.
Impossible!
Ana shrieked.
You do not control it! Why is it defending?
I linked my will to Zoya's, funneling as much of the magic as I could through her. The Asha grunted, and I felt the wards unravel as she dissolved Ana's barrier. Kaelin's sword slid out of his scabbard, runes flashing through the air. Fire streamed toward the faceless, but she evaded it. Telamine drew his own heavy sword, countering Kaelin's blow.
Is this what it has come down to, Kaelin?
The king said, taunting him.
Do you now raise your hand against me, as your father did?
You betrayed us! Kaelin shouted. Telamine swung again, and Kaelin's blade shattered. The Deathseeker retreated, and I saw faint cuts on his face and arms where the sword's fragments had sliced him.
Common steel versus royal metal. This is no contest, boy.
Don't underestimate me, uncle. Kaelin sidestepped the next attack and lashed out with a leg sweep. The king stumbled, and Kaelin rose to strike him on the arm,
sending his sword sliding several feet away. Then he struck again at the center of the king's chest, sending the burly man flat on his back. Zoya snatched up the sword, tossing it to Kaelin.
"Surrender, Aena," Polaire said grimly, her and Althi's runes weaving around them. "Immediately."
"Now."
The ground shuddered again, breaking apart underneath me and lifting me off my feet. The Eshma forced itself up from the soil, screeching, only a few feet from where Mikaela, Khalid, and Vanner stood.
"Move, Khalid!"
Zoya yelled.
"A few more seconds,"
the forger insisted, his hand still through Vanner's chest. The Eshma yowled, and its spikes lengthened. Khalid ripped his hand free, and the bright light of Mikaela's heart's glass illuminated the room. After years hidden away, its light seemed brighter than any Asha's heart's glass I had ever seen. But the ground shuddered again, and Khalid lost his footing. The silver heart's glass landed with a thud by Vanner's feet. Mikaela staggered, and the Eshma attacked. I tried to fight my way into the Eshma's mind, but couldn't. Aena's hold on it was absolute. Kaelin leaped forward, and I saw Polaire and Althi closing the distance to Mikaela, shield runes forming around their friend. King Vanner moved. There was a sickening crunch. Mikaela stared wordlessly at her former lover, impaled by one of the Eshma's spikes. The royal noble's arm reached for her, and the silver heart's glass glittered in his hands. He smiled slowly, a strange look on the otherwise expressionless face, like he was in the process of relearning how. "Vanner," Mikaela said softly. He placed the heart's glass in her hands, and with a sigh, crumbled into ashes and dust, leaving only the Eshma and the spike behind. Furious at being deprived of a victim, the Deva lunged forward again. Runes burst forth and surrounded the Eshma. The beast abandoned all attempts at assault and retreated, shrieking as currents danced through its flesh. Mikaela stood in the center of that glowing storm, her heart's glass a beautiful display of unrepentant magic and light, scorching the walls of the tomb around her with her fury. For a few moments, the Eshma lay under her thrall, enough for it to retreat. But soon, her strength left her, and Mikaela sank down, breathing hard.
"Welcome back," Zoya said, grabbing Mikaela. "Now let's get out of here before we literally have no more ground to stand on."
We made it out of the tombs just in time, before the Eshma breached the catacombs' roof to take a swipe at the Ozzy. The ladder sent flames through the broken ceiling. The Eshma hollered in response, a ball of spikes tumbling toward the Deva. I grabbed at the Ozzy's mind, registering its shock and pain as the two creatures collided. I tasted metal in my mouth as the Eshma spikes dug in. The Ozzy breathed fire directly at the other beast. It detached from our hide and rolled away, its barbs black and charred.
"Assassins!"
I heard King Telamane scream at the soldiers.
"Kill them!"
I could hear the sounds of battle in the distance, and realized that Alzrin and Shadi were also attacking the city. Althi extracted the moisture from the air, channeled water and thick mud into the soil surrounding the Eshma. The Eshma grunted when its spiked talons sank into the newly created quagmire. It struggled to raise itself, but only managed to submerge itself deeper.
"The face is its most vulnerable," she called out. "Concentrate your attacks there."
The Ozzy swung its tail spike, striking hard across the beast's snout and tearing through flesh. The Eshma wailed in agony. Polaire threw cutting wind and fire in Aena's direction. Earth, air, and water runes sprung up around Zoya, twisting themselves into a complicated knot to spew jets of acid. The faceless called up walls of the dead, even as Polaire's corrosive magic hissed and fizzled against the corpses. Althi sent more earth runes burrowing deep, but Aena avoided the sinkhole, her cadavers carrying her to safer ground.
Is that all you have? She said mockingly.
Even trapped, the Eshma was still a deadly opponent. Its spikes lengthened to twice its size, and we all had to dance out of the way when it began attacking indiscriminately. A lone spike came whizzing in my direction, but a shield rune from Kaelin kept it from slicing into me. Very few of the soldiers had taken up Telamane's order, not wanting to get in between the two battling Deva. The half-dozen who were courageous enough to do so were easily dispatched by Fox. Michaela ignored the danger, walking toward the Eshma, her face intent.
Mickey!
Polaire cried out.
Keep away!
The Eshma hissed, turning its terrible gaze on the lone Asha approaching it. Michaela was close enough for the beast to swipe at her with an outstretched limb.
Stop!
The Asha raised her hand. The claws stopped in midair, as if hitting an invisible barrier. The Eshma reared back, and a quick brush against its thoughts told me it was confused, though still under Einar's control.
What are you doing?
The faceless hissed. Her willpower was extraordinary to retain her influence on the Eshma while fending off attacks by Polaire and Zoya. I soon understood. Einar was too firmly ingrained in the Eshma. To wrest control would take too much effort, too much time. But she was using minor spells to confuse and intimidate the Deva, which I had never thought to do before. The Eshma hissed, runes of doubt and confusion coloring its mind. It stopped.
Fight!
Einar screamed. Michaela threw fear into its mind. It scrambled back, but the sand retained its hold. When the Eshma threw its head up and howled, exposing the fragile flesh of its underbelly, I called to the Ozzy and we jumped. Three rows of teeth tore into the Deva's face and neck, the Eshma screams cutting off when we found its jugular. The blood flowed more earnestly, and the Eshma struggled and twitched. I fought off the urge to throw up at the thick, clotting texture of it in my mouth and held on grimly until the jerking stilled and the Deva grew slack in our grip. Its limbs, no longer fighting, slid out of the quicksand with a horrific sucking sound. Panting, pleased, I turned to smile weakly at Michaela. I drew my knife and drove it toward her chest.
Tia!
Fox shoved my mentor out of the way, taking my attack through his arm. Stunned, I opened my mouth and found that I couldn't speak. No sound came from my throat, even as my mind screamed.
It's quite easy to slay a beast.
Though she lost her Deva, Einar was triumphant, having nailed a better prize. She clutched my protection stone in one hand. It glowed.
Can you do the same with your precious bone witch, Michaela?
Let her go, Einar. I set my own knife against my throat, feeling the sharpness against my skin.
Not quite yet,
the faceless purred, and the pressure against my neck increased.
Attempt to get inside my head, Michaela, and I shall slit your precious ward's throat.
I could feel Einar increasing her hold, using me as a gateway into the Ozzy, who was already struggling, alarmed, as my thoughts crumbled away. I could feel its fear as the strings between us unraveled.
Tia,
Kaelin said quietly. The heart-share rune spun on his hand. He had always been a quick study. He released the spell, and I felt it fill me up. The knife dropped from my hand, and Einar's gloating expression changed to one of consternation as she clawed at my thoughts, but found nothing as Kaelin stole me away from her reach.
Come to me,
I heard, and then I was running, throwing myself into his arms. That brief second was all it took. In her desperation, knowing that the tide of battle had turned against her, Einar lashed out at the one other mind she still had control over. The Ozzy screeched in pain, its three heads weaving in agony as the faceless all but tore into its thoughts, brutal in her quest for dominance. The Deva thrashed wildly, and its tail lifted, the deadly spike whipping through the air straight at Michaela. 1 second was all it took. 1 second for Polaire's shield runes to flicker to life. 1 second too late for Michaela to delve into the Aussie's mind to pacify its rage. 1 second for Aina to beat her there. The Aussie's thoughts disappearing into darkness. Away from mine. The Deva's tail pierced through Polaire's shield. Trembling, the dark-haired Asha's spell wavered and disappeared, leaving her stock still, eyes wide in surprise, as blood spread through the front of her shirt where the spike had torn through.
No!
Michaela sank to her knees as Polaire toppled, catching her best friend before she could hit the ground. Althea ran to them, heedless of the still-writhing Aussie. Under Kaelin's control, I watched in dazed disbelief as the healer fell to her knees beside the unmoving Polaire, Michaela's hands over the wound to staunch the flowing blood. Aina was panting, the exertion of controlling the Aussie sapping her strength, though she began to smile. Telamane had snatched an underling's sword and held it against Khalid's throat, a warning not to intervene.
So much for the vaunted Polaire,
Aina wheezed, still drunk on power.
Tia,
Fox whispered. But I was moving, my mind working from someplace far away, my thoughts scattered into the void. It was a sensation not unfamiliar to me from back when I had taken in dark rot at Denoris and watched Usiege die. But this felt different. I was quiet, filled with the cold detachment of fury and a horrible eagerness. Althea looked back at us, her own face tear-stained, and slowly shook her head. And then I could hear the sound of my mind snapping.
The princess's regiment waited a couple of miles away, far enough to evoke a deceptive feeling of safety. I feared that the Heartforger and I would be regarded as prisoners of war, but Lord Fox had commanded the soldiers to treat us like honored guests. Princess Inessa sprang to her feet, flinging her arms around her consort with a sob.
"Why are they fighting?"
she wept into his chest.
"Where is Tia, Lady Michaela?"
"Most of the elders have been blighted," he told her soberly, and she recoiled in shock. "If Michaela and the others fall, we must be ready."
"If they fall,"
she choked out, staring at him in horror. "If I die, you and the Empress are to return to Keon without delay. Take your honor guards and ride as hard as you can for the ships. I sent word for preparations to begin."
"No,"
she clutched at his arms.
"I won't leave you, Fox."
"I have no choice, Inessa, but I will die in peace if your face is the last vision I see." She cried harder and refused to let go. The Bone Witch's brother made no protest. The Heartforger paced the tent, but I remained seated, finding little reason to move. If Fox died, then it meant the Dark Asha had fallen too, and the battle was lost. But an hour passed, and then two. The sounds of battle faded, and lightning no longer leaped across the horizon. The princess clung to her lover the whole time. The end did not come. Mistress Parmina approached us, but there was none of the spitfire arrogance she displayed in the Denorian throne room. Her shoulders were slumped, as if in defeat.
"The scouts have returned, Fox. It is done."
"Then Tia is alive." Hope returned to the man's face, and the princess broke into fresh, happy tears.
"But not without a price," Mistress Parmina said.
To my surprise, she lowered her head and, unabashedly, began to weep.
31. I didn't know what to do. Hope had disappeared with the deadly swipe of that spiked tail that ended Polaire's life. My world had shrunk until there was nothing but her dead body, the sounds of Michaela and Alfie's crying.